This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, December 21st of 2022. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear how a Mexican state is serving their citizens residing in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. The Broomfield Veterans Museum is hosting a holiday train exhibit, and tomorrow is its last day. Chris Moore will have his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then Maeve Conran speaks with three booksellers from the Boulder Bookstore on their favorite books of the year and recommendations for readers of all ages. After that, we have episode 3 of The Water, Under Pressure podcast from the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. At 9:30, Uncle Jeff will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Stacy Johnson.
Fire crews contained the 19-acre Sunshine Wildland fire by 65% Tuesday night, which prompted Boulder County officials to lift all remaining mandatory evacuation notices. The Daily Camera reports that residents in the Pine Brook Hill neighborhood will remain under an evacuation warning, with travel limited to just residents for the road closure at Linden Avenue and Timber Lane. Officials say the fire that started Monday afternoon at the 2900 block of Sunshine Canyon Drive did destroy the location's house and damaged another along Bristlecone Way. Investigators have not publicly released information as to what caused the fire. County officials cautioned that high winds and a red flag warning in effect today could cause the fire to grow again. Fire crews also addressed another wildland fire late Monday evening that started in a yard near a mulch pile at the 10,000 block of 4 Mile Canyon Drive. Crews quickly contained the small 0.1-acre fire, which resulted in no property damage. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office says crews found no suspicious activity related to the fire. A federal investigation found Denver police violated the civil rights of people who speak little or no English. KGNU's Benita Lee has more.
The U.S. Department of Justice began investigating interactions between Denver police and non-native English speakers in 2018 following complaints by locals. Denverites were concerned about officers arresting residents in the East Colfax neighborhood who spoke Burmese and Rohingya. Investigators found that officers often used children or other family members to help translate or did not use interpreters at all. As a result, police were arresting non-proficient speakers without offering them translation accommodations so that they could understand why. The Department of Justice says this is a violation of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Federal officials agreed Monday to a settlement with the Denver Police Department that will require new policies and training on appropriate translation services. Police will no longer be able to use relatives, minors, or other bystanders to translate, except in urgent situations. Federal officials also announced a new nationwide initiative to help law enforcement agencies provide language services. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
Boulder County Public Health issued a public health advisory Tuesday because of the Arctic front the National Weather Service says will be in the area starting tonight, throughout tomorrow, and into Friday morning. A winter storm watch is also in effect for tonight. The forecasters say the wind chill could drop as low as minus 30 degrees along the front range, with the coldest wind chills occurring over the state's northeast plains at minus 50. The health says at minus 5 degrees and wind speed at 30 miles per hour, people can get frostbite in about 10 minutes. The County Health Department is asking residents to avoid the outdoors as well as not leave pets outside for extended periods. Health officials say the dangerous low temperatures and cold wind chills will make children, the elderly, people with disabilities, and those without stable housing more vulnerable to the harsh conditions, and are urging residents to make frequent checks on those who may be in harm's way. As part of the health advisory, officials are also cautioning residents to avoid using stoves, barbecue grills, or ovens to heat homes, as they can create a high risk of carbon monoxide poisoning. In preparation for the Arctic blasts, Governor Jared Polis activated more than 100 National Guard members Tuesday to help jurisdictions deal with response, recovery, and mitigation. For anyone who needs to get warm or spend the night, the City of Boulder, Boulder County, and the Boulder Office of Emergency Management will be operating a 24-hour emergency warming center at the East Boulder Community Center, located at 5660 Sioux Drive, starting today at 2 p.m. through Saturday morning. For unhoused residents who need night shelter in Boulder County, organizations expanding their welcome mat are Longmont's Homeless Outreach Providing Encouragement, Boulder's Youth Nonprofit Together, and the Boulder Shelter for the Homeless. For the Boulder Shelter for the Homeless, the Daily Camera reports the Critical Weather Day Shelter will be offered Thursday only to individuals who stayed in the shelter overnight, and the shelter will not accept walk-ups. Denver officials announced the Denver Coliseum will open as a 24-hour emergency warming shelter starting today at 3 p.m. Denver is also activating the city's rec centers and libraries as warming centers during their regular operating hours. Before tonight's Arctic blast and snow sets in, skies will be partly cloudy with increasing clouds and wind gusts as high as 55 miles per hour for Boulder. There is a red flag warning in effect from 11 a.m. this morning to 4 p.m. this afternoon for the Front Range foothills. Today's highs will reach 51 for Denver and the upper 40s for Boulder and Fort Collins. The National Weather Service says snow is likely mainly after 4 p.m. with new snow accumulations ranging from 1 to 5 inches throughout the evening. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. Local officials in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, say that close to 30% of the town's population is Latino, and a large number of those are from the Mexican state of Tlaxcala. Many of these immigrants have been unable to see their relatives for years, but now, the Tlaxcala government is opening an office in Jackson Hole to help those immigrants get birth certificates and reunite families across borders. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KHOL's Hannah Merzbach reports.
On an early December afternoon, grandkids, parents, and grandparents are huddled together in the waiting area near a Christmas tree in the Jackson Hole Airport. They are just outside of the security line, taking the last few minutes to spend time together before some of them board. One woman, who has black hair and wears a pink shirt, is Rosa Preciado. She's lived and worked in Jackson Hole for 18 years. She's sending off her parents, who are going back to their home in Tlaxcala, Mexico.
My parents could be with my children. They could be with my nieces and nephews, with my sisters. We really enjoyed it.
Like much of the area's Latino population, Preciado immigrated from the Mexican state of Tlaxcala, and she's unable to return to her home country and see her family because of her documentation status. But her parents were able to come visit her thanks to a new program through the government from Tlaxcala, which helps Mexican elders visit their families in Jackson.
The government helped make it possible for them to come, made it easier for them to be here.
The program is part of a larger initiative from the state of Tlaxcala and its Immigrant Assistance Office. The goal is to provide resources to Mexican nationals living in the United States and bridge gaps between generations. The agency does this in part by running reunification programs and paying half of all travel costs for visits up to 30 days. The director of the Immigrant Assistance Office is Paula Zabalsa.
We want them to feel close to their land, to their homeland, and to have the support of the Tlaxcalan government.
The group opened its first U.S. office in New York earlier this year. Other Mexican states have programs like this, but the New York office was a first for Tlaxcala. Zabalsa says the agency started in New York because it has the largest population of Tlaxcaltecans at about 2,500 people. The small mountain town of Jackson has 1,500 people from Tlaxcala, just 1,000 less than New York. That's the second largest Tlaxcaltecan population in the U.S. Zabalsa says that's why, as early as February, Jackson will be home to the next Immigrant Resource Center, which will also offer Tlaxcaltecans help with documents such as passports and visas.
You have to do a lot of things to get a legal document from Mexico, and sometimes it's impossible.
That's Alex Perez, who is also sending his parents off at the airport alongside his teenage daughter. He says the new office will give immigrants like him more resources compared to when he came to Jackson 16 years ago.
So if they open that office with those kind of programs, it's going to be more easy for us to live here eventually.
Many immigrants can't travel back to Mexico to get documents such as birth certificates, since they may not be let back into the U.S. The Jackson office will help them get birth certificates and other documents critical for immigration. People such as Perez have been coming to Jackson from Tlaxcala since at least the 1990s, when word spread in small Mexican towns of the job opportunities in Wyoming. The two places have a lot in common. They both have snow-covered peaks, a cowboy culture, and a small population.
People know each other in those little towns where I came from. So people who are usually live here first, they go back and they tell people there's opportunities here, and they end up bringing a lot of people to this side.
According to local counts, Latinos as a whole make up to 30% of the town's population and are the backbone of the town's labor force. Perez works as a carpenter and now has a family of his own here.
Probably as my case, like many, we end up living here for many years. That wasn't my main plan, but I'm here now for about 16 years.
For 10 of those years, Perez was unable to see his family in Mexico because of travel costs. This visit was only his teenage daughter's third time meeting her grandparents. Cristina Sanchez is helping her dad prepare to board. She left Tlaxcala 27 years ago, and while her dad has been able to come see her, she says others aren't as lucky. She's happy that future generations may be able to have closer connections with their family in Tlaxcala.
I hope they continue to give these opportunities. It's a very beautiful experience, and it's something that the families enjoy. And, well, hopefully other families will have this opportunity.
These five elders were the first group to come to Jackson from Tlaxcala through this program. But more are awaiting visas for trips next year. With the opening of the new Immigrant Resource Center as early as February, more reunification programs are on the horizon. Hannah Merzbach, KHOL News.
The Broomfield Veterans Museum is not only a home to military history, but in the excitement of the holiday season, is providing an opportunity for young and old to learn about trains, especially trains during the World War II era, with the help of members from the Colorado Toy Train Foundation. KGNU's Stacy Johnson recently visited the museum and is ready to toot the horn and share all the bells and whistles coming from the museum's special exhibit.
Members of the Colorado Toy Train Foundation in recent weeks have been showcasing a model railroad exhibit at the Broomfield Veterans Museum that depicts military and holiday-themed trains from World War II and the Korean War eras. Bear Owen, vice president of the foundation and who is also a member of the museum, explains the group's aim in doing the exhibit, especially during the height of the holiday season.
Electric trains, toy trains, have become traditional. A lot of people put them around the base of a Christmas tree or a Hanukkah tree. And people are nostalgic about an electric train and a Christmas tree. And here at the Veterans Museum, we actually do have a Christmas tree with a loop of track and a train running around it. That's part of it. The other part of it is the Broomfield Veterans Museum, besides emphasizing Christmas and generating traffic for the museum, we also are running military-themed trains, focusing mainly on the World War II period.
Owen says the World War II era was an interesting period for the railroad industry as a switch occurred for pulling trains.
Around World War II, American railroads, which were a major industry for over 100 years, a backbone industry of the American economy, switched from motive power, locomotives that were powered by steam, either burning coal or oil, or in an earlier period, wood, cordwood. They transitioned from that for pulling trains to diesel electric locomotives. So it's an interesting period where you saw two major different types of locomotion for pulling trains, and a lot of model railroaders modeled that period.
Besides a military train depiction and generating excitement for the holiday season, Owen says the group also has another primary emphasis for the display.
A lot of parents are concerned that their kids have their noses stuck in an iPad or an iPhone constantly. And we've all gone into a restaurant and seen mom and dad and three kids, and they're not talking to each other. They have their face in one of these handheld devices. We love to have kids come, and we've had a lot of them in here in the museum today, and it's just magical to watch their faces light up when we hand them a remote controller and they're controlling a large steam or diesel locomotive, and they can sound the whistle or the horn, turn the bell on and off, control the speed, and it's magical.
Owen says the Colorado Toy Trains Foundation's exhibit also offers a tangible aspect for kids.
We also have a layout with what we call accessories. Like there's a barrel loader, a lumber loader, a log loader and unloader, a magnetic crane to pick up scrap metal and put into a gondola or a hopper car. And the kids love it. They love the three-dimensional, and we don't say don't touch. We say, yeah, go ahead and touch it. Put those barrels in that barrel loader and then press the button and see the action happen. And that's a big part of our goal, is to get kids involved in something other than just electronic media.
If you find you're using the term bells and whistles, Owen and the Colorado Toy Train Foundation have an explanation for that.
Toy trains go all the way back to the year 1900 when Joshua Lionel Cowan began Lionel Electric Trains, and goes up through the present with all the onboard computerized controls and bells and whistles. The term bells and whistles, everybody uses that. A lot of them don't realize that it goes back to toy trains. That was a big innovation in electric trains, was when Lionel came out with a whistle, an engine that whistled like steam engines.
Thursday, December 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., will be the last day of the special toy train modular exhibit at the Broomfield Veterans Museum. For listeners who want to learn more about the Colorado Toy Train Foundation and their efforts in preserving fun not only for themselves, but for kids of all ages, the group's website is coloradotoytrain.org. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
Up next is Make Them Hear You with Chris Moore.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you. And tell them in our struggle we would not.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. A bipartisan group of senators led by Chuck Schumer is still hoping to piggyback major marijuana legislation to must-pass year-end bills. The group has the Justice Department's approval for legislation allowing cannabis companies access to banking institutions. Running cannabis businesses on a cash basis has created extreme security risks, with owners and workers being held up, tortured, mutilated, even murdered. The bill will also create grants for states to expunge the records of past marijuana convictions. Personally, in my 20 years as a prison volunteer, I have seen lives destroyed by the war on drugs, which in the case of marijuana enforcement is especially tragic. The Justice Department has stated that it would be able to implement the legislation. This is an encouraging reversal of the stand they took early this year when they said they did not believe they could implement marijuana reform. This legislation is actually the result of merging two bills, Secure and Fair Enforcement, or Safe Banking Act, and the Harnessing Opportunities by Pursuing Expungement, HOPE Act, that would attract both conservatives and progressives in both houses of Congress. The bill will not make it harder for law enforcement to prosecute other drug laws, and it will not allow money laundering. Schumer hopes to attach this legislation to a must-pass bill like the National Defense Authorization Act. Schumer and Senator Jeff Merkley have been negotiating with Republicans throughout the fall, including Senators Steve Daines, Rand Paul, and Dan Sullivan. The Safe Banking Act, which lets pot shops open bank accounts and get loans, has passed the House six times and stalled in the Senate due to Republican opposition. Relaxing cannabis laws enjoys wide agreement among voters, but disagreement in Congress over whether to prioritize banking or comprehensive reform has led to a stalemate, which this two-pronged bill hopes to overcome. This bill does not legalize marijuana at the federal level. The feds will still define cannabis as a Schedule I drug with no medical purpose, like heroin and LSD. A more comprehensive cannabis bill introduced by Schumer earlier this year to decriminalize it federally while allowing states to enforce their own marijuana laws remains stalled. Congress has also just submitted a major medical marijuana research bill, which Biden just signed into law. Biden has also recently pardoned all prior federal offenders of federal laws against simple marijuana possession. That went into effect shortly before the midterm elections. If you have thoughts on these marijuana bills, you can contact your senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
And in an update to what you just heard in Make Them Hear You, senators dropped banking reforms for cannabis business owners from the omnibus spending bill just ahead of their winter recess. Time now for Naturally, with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. So some of you may have heard of my most recent misadventures, but if not, I'm going to share right here. So a week ago, my first dear husband, Sergey Mars, said he was dying. So my daughter Sunflower and I decided to fly to the Ozarks to be by his side. Dear man that he is. So we flew to St. Louis, rented a car, which Sunflower knows how to drive. I do not. We did an ohm and surrounded our car with an aura of light and drove down into the Ozarks in land so difficult to get to. Of course, in the 70s, when it was a commune, the intention was it to be a place where you could grow illegal weeds. And the police could never get down there. But, you know, now it just makes it more difficult. In any case, it was good to see Sergey. He has an amazing hobbit home. And Sunflower and I were making a bed on the top floor, and I fell 15 feet down a hole. I envisioned Alice in Wonderland falling down the rabbit hole and landed on a tile floor on the bathroom below. Now, in most cases, one would just go to the emergency room, but remember the Ozarks, the dark, the no surfaces anywhere nearby, bump, bump. So Sunflower gave me homeopathic arnica and rescue remedy and put ice packs on me. And in the morning, Sergey offered his friend to please drive me back to Boulder. You're not supposed to fly with a concussion, apparently. I know I had a concussion. But somehow I got into the car and we drove to Colorado. And I have no broken bones. But what am I doing for all of this travesty and tragedy? I am taking lots of minerals, calcium, magnesium, boron, zinc, vitamin K2, vitamin C. I'm doing homeopathic arnica, homeopathic hypericum, which is good for nerve damage. I'm laying on a bio mat or a healthy line chakra mat that irradiates magnetic frequency. I'm putting tachyon beads on me. I'm doing lots of prayers of gratitude, overnight nettle tea. And then what are the good foods to eat? Well, sardines contain bones. So that might not be your favorite food, but sardines, black tahini. Black foods are really high in minerals for building bones and teeth. Wild rice and taking time to rest. So grateful for all of my dear friends. Many blessings. And remember, all it takes is 1 second to change your life. So I'm a big believer in surrounding yourself with a frequency of light. I'm so glad for any angelic helpers that were part of that scenario. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Stewart. Shannon Young has been our producer. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Alexis Kenyon, Hannah Mersbach, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a year in review of books, and then the Water, Under Pressure podcast. That's coming up after these news headlines from the BBC.